AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu. At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome back to Dark Florida. This week's episode, we step far beyond the swamps and into the shadowed edges of Iceland, a land where the veil thins, the mountains watch, and the old stories breathe. This week, I'm joined by John from the 21CD podcast, and together we dive into his life-changing encounter with Iceland's hidden people, the elusive ancient Hæðarfólk, who revealed themselves to him at the infamous Killing Pools. What he saw that day didn't just confirm the folklore. It shattered the boundary between myth and reality. From there, our conversation opens into a world of deeper questions and how the Algonquin lore parallels the Fae, and whether we've misunderstood the very nature of what watches us from the tree line. And like all the best Dark Florida episodes, this journey didn't stop there. The further we went, the stranger the past became. But before we get to that, make sure you're following along on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast for updates and everything that's happening behind the scenes. And if you have had your own encounter or would like to be a guest on the show, feel free to email me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. And you can support the show at buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida. And be sure to subscribe to the YouTube channel at youtube.com/@darkflorida411. Be sure, wherever you're listening, to drop a 5-star review and share the show with a friend. It really helps. So settle in, because this one wanders into the realm of the unseen. Welcome back to this week's episode of Dark Florida. Tonight, I am joined by John from the 21CD podcast. Thank you so much for joining me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
I'm really excited to get a chance to sit down and talk. I know that you have a rich history with some cryptid encounters, as well as looking into interdimensional beings and things along that nature. So for maybe the listeners who aren't familiar with you, can you just share a little bit about your show and who you are?
Yeah, so I'm John, as you said, from the 21CD podcast. And over at my show, I talk about a wide range of things, but mainly lost history, times in our collective human past that have been altered by governments. I also believe in cryptids. I've had a number of sightings myself that have all but confirmed that I do believe there's something else going on planet Earth that they are hiding. And I kind of try to dive into those things in ways that lean heavily on historical accounts, tales from Native Americans and indigenous people from all over the world, very history-based type stuff, because I believe that history repeats itself. And the best way to understand the now and the future is by looking at the past.
Absolutely. I love that. I'm a big history nerd myself, and I can't wait to kind of get a little bit
more into that, especially when we talk about lost history and why are they hiding it. What are some of the cryptid encounters that have really reshaped the way that you perceive reality and what's going on? Could you walk us through maybe one of your experiences?
Yeah, I've had, it's kind of interesting. Once you have one cryptid encounter, or you think you do, right? Because I'm never going to be that guy who believes that everything that I see is a cryptid encounter, but it feels like once you've had one, or whether it's a ghost, whether it's, you know, a monster in the woods, or, you know, some kind of hidden folk, like I searched for in Iceland, it's kind of like whenever you have one of those encounters, it feels like something opens up before you, and then you are permitted to kind of experience more of those types of encounters throughout your life if you just allow yourself to. And so I've had a few, I believe, but the main one that kind of really kicked off my podcasting journey was, I live in Algonquin territory in Wisconsin right now, and it was something out there in the woods that me and my brother had seen. And at that time, we started doing interviews about it. I actually just got done doing a History Channel feature about it as well. And it turned into something way bigger than I thought. So from there, we ended up kind of going all over the world and looking for more stuff. And I would say that the probably the biggest one is not what I saw here, but actually the Iceland experiences that we had, where we initially weren't exactly sure what we saw, but inevitably we came to the conclusion that probably what we saw were the huldufólk, which are they're not quite elves, they're not quite goblins, they're this sort of entity that lives in Iceland, specifically Iceland, and huldufólk basically translates to hidden people. And they're kind of like the little people from the Appalachian territories and stuff like that, where they are these beings that exist within the realm of nature, but can go invisible and visible at will. They're not necessarily good. They're not necessarily bad. They're just like you or I. They just kind of exist. And once in a while, Icelanders see them. Icelanders are very aware of their presence. They alter where their roads go, for instance, based on where huldufólk territories are. There are churches throughout the country that are made out of stone that they believe that the huldufólk use. There's stones and caves that appear to change and move depending on when the huldufólk use them and all of that. And I would say that that's probably my most profound sighting. It's a long story, but I can definitely get into it if you'd like.
Yeah. And what you're describing, it kind of sounds like what I've heard people, like you said, Appalachia, that would be comparable to the Pukwudgie.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
I think the main difference would probably be that the hidden people of Iceland are almost the same size as normal human beings, where I think the Pukwudgie are typically considered smaller. I did compare them to the Pukwudgie, but I think mainly in nature, you know, they're kind of like that sort of style of cryptid. But the interesting thing about the Icelandic hidden people is they are almost like a lost race. They're like they are what inhabited Iceland before the Vikings initially went there, before the Norwegian type people ended up in Iceland and began to cut down all the trees and mine the land and whatnot. These hidden people, the huldufólk, are what were there first. This was a few years ago, maybe probably close to 7 years ago now. And my brother and I we'd had a fascination with Iceland. So one day we just up and went. We decided it was time. So we went and we were there for a couple weeks. Didn't really have any profound experiences. Weren't even going there to have an experience in general. Just wanted to see the land that is Iceland. It's absolutely, you know, it's cheap to get there, and it's one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. So we were eager to experience it. And this was after we had driven around the entire island. We camped the whole time. We can't really do it anymore, but back then Iceland had a free camp law where as long as you were not crossing any fences or within visible within eyesight of like an actual house, you as a tourist could camp anywhere you wanted for free. And so there was a lot of opportunity to roam and see parts of the country that you just can't see anymore, because as you can imagine, people took advantage of that and ruined it for everybody. But we were there. Yeah, I mean, it's really too bad, because there's so much of Iceland, inland Iceland, that just never gets seen because the tourist spots are all on the outside. And so this was a good opportunity to experience kind of an Iceland that I don't know if I'll ever get to see again. I've been back since and it wasn't quite the same. Mm-hmm. Regardless, it was our last day in Iceland and we were kind of tired. And there was a party of four of us. It was me and my brother and two of our other buddies that we went there with. And they're not really the adventurous type, and were more or less just going because they're photographers and wanted to take some pictures of waterfalls and stuff. And me and my brother decided that we were going to go out in the middle of the night and just go for a walk, because there's this particular place in Iceland, and it's one of the more famous places because it's essentially where the modern Icelandic government was born. And it's called Thingvellir. And you go there and it's a place of, you can just feel it. It's a place of profound power, because it's also where they sort of adopted Christianity and gave up the old gods. And it's where the old gods were essentially excommunicated from Icelandic belief, and they began to, instead of worship them, the Christians that would come began to actually execute them here. And so this place where they used to go to worship the old gods, now they would go to execute people for believing in the old gods. And as can be imagined, if anybody who is listening has ever experienced any sort of zone of conflict in the spiritual realm, this created a lot of confusion and a lot of violence and a lot of cruelty amongst the people, to the point where they were also tortured to give up the old gods. And if they would accept Christ, then there you go. Now you can be a member of Icelandic society again. It was a lot like the Spanish Inquisition of the South American peoples. And so this place, there's what they call the killing pools, and a river flows alongside a cliff, and it's a long cliff. Iceland is a volcanic landmass, so there's a lot of jagged rocks, jagged cliffs that just kind of jut out of the ground for no reason. There's cataclysms and all sorts of stuff constantly going on, and Iceland is just one of those places where it's very tumultuous weather-wise, and the landscape presents that as well. So there's this river that's kind of cutting through alongside this cliff that goes along the landscape here, and they would drag people through this river where kind of widened a little bit, and they would essentially drag them through the river until they drowned. They would throw them off of the cliffs into the river and then drown them. They would behead them here. They would hang them here. And these pools came to be known as the killing pools. It was especially a zone where they killed witches. And the pools themselves are very cold, very dark water. They are colder and darker than it feels like they should be. At least that was my experience. And I don't think that's necessarily magical in of itself. It's just it's a very deep, cold, dark water. And you can imagine people being drowned there for their beliefs. And the way that they did it in a spectacle sort of style. They would fashion this chair and essentially tie the victim into the chair and then slowly drag them through so that everybody could watch. And so my brother and I, being crazy, we spent some extra time here, and we started noticing that there were signs all over around these pools that said, you know, don't throw coins into the water. Specifically, don't throw coins into the water, because that's for some reason what humans do is they see a puddle of water, they think if I throw a coin in it, it's good luck. And that in of itself goes back to origins with the Fae and whatnot. And I thought this was really interesting because specific to Iceland are tales of lost treasure. I mean, the Vikings would come here with their loot. They had villages here. They were very superstitious and religious in their own right. They believed that the gods hungered for treasure as they did. They believed that by harvesting treasure, they would earn their way into Valhalla, by dying good in battle, all that kind of stuff that everybody has romanticized. And so their cryptids kind of have the same sort of mind. Their cryptids, their elves, their huldufolk, their trolls, their dwarves, they all value gold, and they all value treasure and iron and weaponry and stuff like that. And as I was looking at this and watching just regular tourists completely disobey the signs and throw coins in there, I was thinking to myself, is this in of itself proof of the supernatural? The fact that these people who have no connection to the supernatural, I mean, we're talking about little kids, we're talking about people from all over the world who come to Iceland, and it's, you know, they're wearing their Patagonia, they're wearing their North Face, they're wearing, you know, whatever. They're not the type of people that you would necessarily expect to believe in anything other than if I throw a coin in a pool, it means good luck. And so I found it fascinating that people of all types from all walks of life were drawn to throw their coins, their treasures, into this pool. And Icelandic money is it's got a little bit more weight than US money because there's just less of it. But the bottom of the pool was just absolutely covered with coins and jewelry and necklaces. And it was clear that the Icelanders didn't clean this up. And I thought to myself, you know, I think there's a certain type of power here. And I actually went back my second time and made a documentary specifically trying to find the huldufolk a second time, thanks to that entire first experience there. Because I was just, I knew that there was something more going on here just by the way that everybody was reacting. And so, long story short, my brother and I decided that we're going to camp here. We're going to camp about a mile from here, and we're gonna walk back in the middle of the night, and we're gonna see if there's any sort of energy here. And in hindsight, there was no signs or anything that said you shouldn't do this, but I kind of doubt that if anybody in charge of that place did find us, they probably would have been like, you can't do this. But we weren't exactly thinking in that kind of way, and we weren't there in tourist season, really. We were getting the tail end of the tourists. It was September, close to October, so the weather is getting very cold. They're entering into blizzard season and stuff like that. And regardless, we went and set up camp, and we started walking back, and it was a very dark night, very cloudy night, but the moon was still kind of visible on the horizon, so we could see it casting rays of moonlight across the land. And that was really our only light, because we don't really bring flashlights when we go out into the dark. It's my personal belief that that's one of the reasons people never see anything, is because they've always got some sort of artificial technology looking for something. And that in of itself is kind of an issue, because you simultaneously can't really prove anything if you don't have anything to prove it with. But I believe that the spiritual connection is stronger if you're not bird technology. And so we try to go with as little as possible whenever we go out. And we didn't have any lights or anything, so we walked this mile, and we came to a grove of trees, one of the last groves of trees in Iceland, because the Vikings, when they first arrived, they actually cut down all the trees on the forest, or all the trees on the island, so they could build their towns and their longboats. And so there's very few trees left in Iceland, and this was one of the last groves there. And that's when the energy really started on this trip. We kind of were going through the trees and realizing that there was a profound feeling of not being alone anymore. Like before, up until this point, you could kind of say, you know, okay, it's just the nerves. But once we got into the trees, it became obvious that we weren't really alone. And I say obvious now because I know the end of the story, but as we were going through, we came out on the other side, and we were now coming alongside the river that flowed along the cliff. And there's a trail that kind of winds alongside the river, and there's a bridge that you cross before you get to the killing pools. And the bridge is just a a wooden footbridge. And I would say, I don't know, maybe about half a mile of the trail. We had gone about half a mile up the trail, just about to cross the wooden footbridge. And that's when we started really feeling like we were actually being watched in that moment. Like every step we took, it felt like there was somebody behind us. There was something observing us. We began to feel those feelings of, should we even be here? What if there's like a security guard sitting out here or something like that? It was that feeling of, you know, you don't want to get caught. You don't want to get in trouble. That's the way it started. It was like, I just don't want to get kicked out of the park. On our last day in Iceland, I don't want, you know, then for the authorities or something to show up and fine us or something like that. And plus, we just meant no disrespect anyway. So that's the kind of feeling we were getting. But once we reached the bridge and we began to approach the killing pools, we started seeing things up on top of the cliff. And on top of the cliff, they've got all these jagged outcroppings and these rock and volcanic rock sort of formations. And they're about the size of a man, more or less. Some are 3 feet tall, some are 6 feet tall, some are, you know, they're just jagged outcroppings. And if you look at it from a distance, it actually looks kind of like a castle. And these shadows were jumping from outcropping to outcropping. And at first, it felt like maybe just one. And so you can explain it away. Maybe they don't have a lot of animal life there because it's a volcanic island, but they do have foxes and stuff like that. And so we're like, okay, well, maybe it was one of those foxes. Maybe it was an Icelandic wolf, something like that. But believe it or not, those animals are actually, you're far less likely to see those animals in Iceland than you are to see an elf. So it was kind of like we kept looking now, because now we were curious. And now the feeling of fear is mounting, because it does actually feel like there's something now on top of these cliffs watching us. And that's where the fear is coming from. And I say fear because it became fear. It was no longer curiosity once we started looking up and observing this cliff top, because as we watched, the shadows multiplied and there were literally no, I was talking to my, like we were whispering to each other under our breath. We were just like, are you seeing this? And for maybe a minute and a half, we watched as these things jumped from rock outcropping to rock outcropping. And in Iceland, they call them elf towers. And it became kind of obvious to us in that moment why. Because they would peek out from, they were all doing different things. There were some of them would peek out from behind it, and you would just see like the top half of their body as if you were peeking around the corner of a door. And then there were others that would full body jump from one to the other. There were some that would crawl along the ground. It was just we reasoned that there had to be at least 20 of them. And they were just all just darting from elf tower to elf tower, from outcropping to outcropping. And in that moment, we both described it as basically being too stunned to even move. And we just sat there and watched them. And eventually it got to the point where it was so horrifying, because it was not a feeling of wonder. It was a feeling of like they almost felt malevolent in a way. Like they were showing themselves not because they wanted us to be intrigued, but because this was their place. This was their zone that we had wandered into at a time when maybe they didn't want us to. And so that's when we sort of turned around. We slowly turned around and we started walking back. And then we just started running. And we ran all the way back to the camp. And the next day we left Iceland. And that event triggered just, I don't know, a feeling within me that I already believed in the paranormal, the supernatural, all that kind of stuff before then, but I didn't believe it was so I guess, I don't know, visible. I felt like maybe it was a once in a lifetime type deal, that it, like, you may experience something that you can't explain. But, you know, when people talk about having sight Bigfoot in the woods or seeing Loch Ness Monster or something like that, I never don't believe them. I just wonder if it's more of an experience that's very personal to them than it is for anybody else. And because of that, they experienced it in a certain way. But in that moment, I felt like everything the Icelanders had ever said was validated. And because there was an entire nation that literally built themselves around these figures that lived in the rocks of their land, and now the idea that I was beholding them, I was just like, well, I know I'm not the only one to have seen this, because my brother's with me and we're talking about it as we're experiencing it. We're seeing it together. We're seeing the same thing. We're sitting here whispering, like, how many do you see? I don't know, at least a dozen. Like, it's just like we're talking about it. And then you hear the Icelanders talking about it. And then you read the stories that go all the way back to the origins of Iceland talking about them. And because of that single experience, yeah, I returned last year and filmed a documentary about it. Unfortunately, I didn't see them that time, but that's the thing. I went back with all my cameras. I went back with all my gear, and I made a great film, I think. But it was the journey leading up to something that was unfortunately not seen in the documentary. But it's something that definitely changed the way that I view the world and the universe and God and all of that.
Yeah. No, that's definitely a life-changing moment. Like you said, I never doubt people's experiences, but being able to see something otherworldly or supernatural for yourself, or even paranormal at that, it does change the way that you look at things. I kind of had a come-to-Jesus moment myself, so to speak, when I saw something that I couldn't explain. So you said they had an awareness of you. You said you felt this like mischievous kind of malevolent energy coming from them. What do you think that these Haida folk, hidden people actually are? Do you think that they are interdimensional themselves, or that they are physical ancient beings that just live within the rocks there? Or do you think that they are coming in and out of our reality somehow?
Yeah, so I do think that they can take physical as well as spiritual form in entirety. So I think that sometimes they're tangible and sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're visible and not as an apparition, but as an actual creature that you could place your hands on. But I also believe that they can do that at will. I think there was a time when they were more tangible. They were more visible in a more permanent sense. And as with many cryptids, they began to have to take on a more invisible form to survive. Like any animal on the planet, I believe that we can exterminate cryptids. And so it's my opinion that now the way they operate is largely because of they need to survive. I mean, you might not even know that you're sitting on top of a Haida folk. You might not even know that a hidden person is right next to you, because they can also transform into the earth itself. They can, like Pan or the Green Man, they become one with nature so effectively that, and that's why a lot of people mistake them for elves a lot of the time. And that's sometimes why they're synonymous with elves and lore and stuff, is because they're very nature bound. And that is one thing that I did see on film, actually. And, you know, the video I made got some pretty good views, and people were saying that they were seeing things in the rocks. They were saying that I captured Pan and stuff like that, and I believe I did as well. But I think that was more of a evidence of their existence rather than themselves. And it's so, in that way, I think they're also very bound to an old god sort of existence, where they are spiritual like us. I mean, I consider humans spiritual, but we can't interchange, but they can. But we could also get to the point where we exterminate them accidentally, because they're also killable.
Right. And Now, you said that there is a difference between elves and the hidden people.
It's very slight, but in Icelandic lore, there is a difference between the two. The elves are just so dramatized now. I mean, you've got Santa Claus with his elves, you've got Legolas, you know, you have all these different types of elves and stuff like that. And so, according to very ancient Icelandic lore, they're closely related, but not necessarily the same thing. According to more modern Icelandic lore and tales, they're essentially, the words are used interchangeably.
Okay, gotcha. That's really interesting. It just confirmed everything that the locals had shared with you. Now, like we were talking about the Pukwudgie, do you think that here in North America, specifically America, that we have our own version of the hidden folk? I mean, we talk about the Pukwudgie, and I've even heard reports from indigenous tribes here in Florida about some of the swamps that we have here that they have. They call them the little people, who they're not good. They plant medicine and potions to render you unconscious and make you disappear, things like that. So there does seems to be that, I guess, thread throughout the culture. You have that European folklore and then the American one. Do you think that they are still part of that same tapestry? They might be different, but kind of still similar in the sense of what they may be.
I believe personally that there are hundreds of species of cryptids that exist alongside us that we don't know about because we have been cursed. And we've been cursed. Essentially, we've been cursed, but we also have not been given the blessing to see these things regularly. It all goes back to Adam and Eve and the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, and what knowledge we've been bestowed with, and what knowledge the Watchers gave us that we weren't allowed to have. But just because they gave us some does not mean they gave us all. And I think that there is an entire, I don't know how to really say it other than, just like we have an animal kingdom, there's a spirit kingdom, and that we don't necessarily know what's out there, but it's way more than we could ever imagine. And I think they're in the oceans. I think they're in the air. You know, I don't know if you've heard of the Skywell phenomenon, but like that whole thing where there are air species that there's just we have no concept of. And I think that I know for a fact, my wife is from Colombia in South America. And so I've spent considerable time in South America, and you being in Florida, you guys down there have a deep connection to a lot of Latin America, Central American cryptids. And so, yeah, I definitely believe that they are at least members of the same type of species. I think that, you know, similar to how there's so many different types of apes and whatnot, there's different types of little people. Like, so you do have...
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
The little people from the deep south, you have the ones all over Native American lore that lived in the caves and lived in the hills. I mean, almost every single tribe from Native American history has stories of little people. You also have the Duende, which is going to be a big video that I try to do next year. I'm going back down there to look for the Duende, which are goblins. And I think that you in Florida especially have a lot of goblin problems, and that's why they're bad, because goblins are not here for your well-being. I actually brought one back with me, I believe, in encased in a clay vessel that I have out in a storage unit, because every time I bring it into an apartment or a place where I live or operate, really bad things just start happening. And so I keep it in a totally different storage unit by itself. But this it's crazy to think about, but I mean, if you believe in these things and you think these things are actually real, they have a certain amount of power over you inherently because you believe in them.
Right. And you have that awareness of them. Yeah. I think you covered a lot there. When you talk about the Skywell phenomena, does that kind of go into the movie Nope, where the UFOs that we're seeing may not be traditional UFOs, that they might actually have, they might be a being themselves, not a vessel, but they're actually like a living, breathing creature. Is that sort of what that is?
In a way, yeah. So the way that the UFO and Nope or the aliens was actually just one single living giant. Yeah, in that way, but more like, imagine if my grandma was a bike, but it's like, no, like imagine like that. Yeah, the ocean was in the sky. So you have all the fish, you have all the different types of species, big, great and small. But because of the quality that they have, just like you can't see the wind, but you can see the effects of right. the wind. You can't necessarily see the creatures, but you can feel the effects of them. You just don't know that that effect is caused by a living creature.
That's really interesting. I'm going to need to look into that. That's right up my alley.
In that way, I mean, when you see clouds that are moving on their own, when you see one single cloud that doesn't appear like it should be there or is moving in a way that maybe it shouldn't be, that might not just be a cloud. You know, in Algonquin lore and stuff, the fog will often appear around the Wendigo and all that kind of stuff so that you don't actually see the cryptids, because nature itself sort of follows them around and they can manipulate it and stuff like that. And I really just don't think that's too far-fetched. I actually just recorded an episode tonight kind of along these lines, but I don't think that's too far out of the realm of possibility when our own government just claimed that we have the technology to manipulate the weather. So
yeah. Well, it's interesting you say that. I just got back from a BFRO expedition that was in South Carolina. And at one point on the trip, we go out on these night ops. We break into small groups and we go to areas that we've scouted and we suspect that there's activity. And me and another gentleman, we were going down this road and I had out this app on my phone. It's essentially a spirit box and it's not a random word generator either. We're walking, I have it, and I have the idea. I'm like, hey, what if I played some Native American music? I've done that in the past. It's just, you know, we like to try out, different things while we're out there. So he's like, yeah, go for it. So I play some shamanic Cherokee music, and I only do it for about 30 seconds a minute, and I turn it off, and then I cut the spirit box on. And then right through, we get this response that says, I can hear you. So I was like, whoa, okay. It says, I can hear you. And then it says, bring it to me. And in that moment, it wasn't until later we kind of thought that it was referring to the music to my phone as far as the music went. But it said, bring it to me. And we're like, what is that about? And we're like, I don't know what that is. You know, we're kind of going back and forth. And then I look around because besides my phone, we weren't shining any lights. There was just enough light in the sky that you could see the road was illuminated. It's a dirt road, so you could see the road. I look around and there's like a fog or a mist rolling in. And I'm like, do you guys see that? Because we had a fire burning, but we were probably 200 yards from the fire. So I'm like, okay, this can't be the smoke from the fire. And then at that same time, we all got a cold chill, like hair stands up cold chill. And it was cold out, but it wasn't like that kind of a chill. And then it comes through and it says, leave now. And it says, angry. And so in that moment, we were like, all right, we're done. We're out. And we left. And then when we were kind of breaking that experience down, we realized probably playing the music caught something's interest. And then just the mist. And like you were saying, with the Algonquin lore of them potentially using that mist to cover themselves, That just triggered that memory for me. And then I've also heard somebody told me that the Sasquatch, that they can summon the wind, that the natives believed that they could summon the wind. And that the idea of that would be to, again, like you said, move undetected.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, imagine one of the ways that humans are very limited is the way that we receive sound. And so when we are listening for something, we have to listen very closely if there's a lot of different sounds going on at the same time. And if you're in an environment where the wind is blowing, the trees are creaking, and know, there's footsteps of deer and there's footsteps of all these little creatures. You're not necessarily going to notice some of those very small sounds that maybe a Sasquatch would even make. As far as your spirit communication, I think that Native American legends and lore and their spirituality is basically my primary focus. And I think that they are just so damaged. Like, what was here before has been so corrupted throughout centuries. And it's not just by colonization, but before any of the white man even got here, they were plagued by giants, they were plagued by demons, they were plagued by constant warfare and cannibalism, they were plagued by all sorts of curses and blights and plagues. And to me, I consider them some of the most dangerous spirits to come in contact with, and the Native Americans do as well. I mean, when you even talk about the Wendigo, allegedly, it's supposed to summon it to your location. I believe, you know, I live less than a mile from a burial mound, and it's just, there's things that are dead in the ground here that they have been trying to hide from us for a very long time. I believe the Nephilim were here in droves, and that is why there's so many stories. Almost every tribe has a story of giants in the land that would eat them. And, you know, you have the Lovelock Cave situation, but that's only one story. There are hundreds of stories like that from all of these different tribes. And they at one point unearthed hundreds, if not thousands, of these skeletons. And then they called them dinosaurs, or they called them mammoths, or they called them whatever they wanted to call them. But many of them were simply stolen, whisked away so that we didn't know the truth. And then, of course, don't even get me started on the massacres once the colonization began, because that in of itself has created a lot of cursed ground, a lot of ground that has become hallowed in a way that, man, I hope you spoke to a Native American spirit and not just some weird ghost, you know what I mean? Because it's like that, right? That would be such a profound and ancient encounter, in my opinion. That's a really cool story.
Yeah. And before we left, we said a prayer. The gentleman I was with, he keeps a card in his pocket that I believe the late Scott Carpenter gave him. And it's a spiritual warfare prayer that just basically anoints us, anoints the area, and just make sure to cut all spiritual ties with anything so nothing could potentially follow us out of there. It wasn't, until we were kind of debriefing and talking about it, did we realized, because I don't want to say I almost forgot that I played the music, but when I was telling the story, I kind of glazed over that part, and they're like, wait, you played the music right before all of this stuff happened. I'm like, oh my gosh, you're right. And yeah, it was really interesting. And I think when you talk about the idea of places being cursed, I firmly believe that. And just speaking about South Carolina in particular, I'm not saying that the state is cursed, but there's a lot of dark history there. And like you said, that goes way back. And I believe that the land itself really holds that energy and that emotion and that bloodshed that was there. A lot of antiquity and sin occurred that just left such a jaded landscape, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And when you talk about being cursed, and you brought up, the Watchers, are you kind of referring to, you know, the original sin, or a different curse entirely?
I think there have been many curses. But I'm speaking about the original fallen Watchers who came to Earth, created the Nephilim, and essentially released cannibalism and giants upon mankind. And that ended up causing humanity to, it didn't cause humanity to fall necessarily, that occurred in the garden, but it began humanity's enslavement to a spiritual kind. And because of that, the demons are all over the earth and all of that kind of stuff. And, you know, another thing is, I believe in, we talk about apocalypses and how there's the great flood should have exterminated all the Nephilim, even though the Bible literally says it didn't and stuff
like that. And thereafter, yep.
Right. And I believe, though, personally, that there have been many apocalypses in very specific locations. You know, when the Israelites, for instance, were going into Canaan, there if you look at other religious texts and like other accounts from that time that are not the Bible, because the Bible is not all inclusive. People think, well, there's no mention of this in the Bible, so it must not have actually happened. Now, the Bible has a very specific purpose, and it is basically to tell you the story of your salvation. But it's not a history book that covers everything that's going on. And so I think, you know, Iceland was an apocalyptic zone. I think it was a Nephilim fortress at one point. And the reason, and they even have stories about how when the volcano that exploded there that triggered the entire island to be covered in lava, it was because Satan himself fell to the earth. And it's kind of, it painted reality in a new way for me, because I think that could have happened all over the place. I kind of went off on a tangent there, but when the Israelites went into Canaan, there were already other people there who were exterminating the Nephilim as they found them. Like there were already, and then there's tales of that happening. Like let's take Lovelock Cave in North America. You have the people there who have no connection to Christ or to God or to Moses exterminating Nephilim. So like all over the planet, there were many apocalypses going on, I think, where God had to literally, or an archangel or whatever you want, had to literally step in and neutralize an evil that was propagating there. And who knows what kind of independent curses came along with each one of those. And so if that happened to such an extent in Iceland, where it literally destroyed the entire island, and now it is a volcanic wasteland, which it is, they can't grow their own crops there. They can't do anything there. The forests are all gone. They have to import everything. All they have is wool and fish. Like, it's just like, there's no way that they can come back from that. I think that here in North America, there are a lot of locations like that as well. Look at the Anasazi people. Look at the Cahokia people, who just completely vanished without a trace. And all they left behind were gigantic holes of bodies or gigantic fields of partially cannibalized remains. It's like, what was actually going on here? And I don't have a huge knowledge base in the Carolinas themselves, but I do know that that was a place that also got a lot of influence from across the oceans, because that was one of the first places to be colonized. Yeah. And so you would have had a lot of stuff coming over from other parts of the world there as well.
For sure. And one of the stories that was shared with me this weekend was about how this particular area has a rich history of Bigfoot, or let's call it the hairy man, that there's an instance where some of the revolutionary soldiers were riding back home, and they said that they saw a being that was as tall as two men, one standing on the other's shoulders. And then you hear, I guess, in Harriet Tubman's journals or diary, that there was a place that she mentioned she would not go through. She wouldn't take her roots through there because of the giant hairy man when she was doing the Underground Railroad. Sometimes I think we think, oh, this only goes just a little bit back or something. And I think people, to your point, don't realize how far back this stuff really goes, how we're really dealing with something ancient. And so it's just fascinating.
Ancient, but also weirdly not that far removed either, because you also right. have, I mean, even Abraham Lincoln, who knows why he yes. said it, but in his speech that now has become more popular, where he talks about how the ancient giants looked out over Niagara. Like, it's just, there was a time, and I mean, I know people can say whatever they want about all the newspaper articles that are mm-hmm. found in the late 1800s, early 1900s, but these Nephilim were, these giants, these beings that were here were household names 100 years ago. And so now it's like, because we are, quote unquote, civilized, we have moved beyond that. And we're now in the age of, you know, we're in the age of science, the machine gods, right. where the demons are once again, this is kind of how I view it. I call them the gods of modern technology, the GMTs, but they basically turn themselves, the monsters themselves have to evolve. So not all that we can't see is evil. But demons are, and monsters are, and they have to evolve in a certain way. And I think that some of them, yes, they retreated into the forests. They retreated into the what we now call the national parks. And, you know, I don't think that it's just feral people that are out there. I think these are zones that have been purposely set apart for beings that we can't get rid of or won't get rid of. But I also think that as demons, they can inhabit anything. And what a better opportunity to inhabit something than AI or modern technology that humanity is constantly obsessed with, constantly looking at, constantly mm-hmm. seeking for advice. I mean, I know people who get relationship advice or spiritual advice from ChatGPT. And it's just these questions should not be asked of technology, but demons aren't stupid. They're ancient. They've been here a lot longer than we are. They know a lot more about God than we do. They know a lot more about the earth than we do, the universe, everything. They're way more intelligent than we are. And all that humanity really has going for it is a soul and being created in the image of God. But beyond that, we're kind of clueless. And so I think there's just so many ways that the curses expand upon the horizon. And now that horizon is becoming so digital that we stop believing in the stuff in the forest because it's no longer, people don't even go into the forest. You know, you don't know what you don't know.
You bring up the national parks, and that's something, and you brought up Abraham Lincoln. So it's really funny that you mentioned that. I was on a round table at a Bigfoot conference this past year, and somebody said, why do you think they're covering it up? Or does the government know about it? And I said, I do believe that the government knows about it. And I referenced that Lincoln quote, as well as there is that rumor that Teddy Roosevelt created the national park systems, like you said, to keep something maybe contained, or at least to give it its own space.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we would be remiss not to reference those 1800 articles where they talk about excavating giant skeletons that are much larger than what we are. And I just have to theorize and just would like to know your opinion on the cover up, because I do believe that, like you said, these gods of old are rebranding. And I've mentioned it on my show before, but I'm still in the middle of reading Return of the Gods. And it's interesting because he does talk about this concept in the beginning of the book where it's like the gods never went away. They just rebranded, sort of to your point of, you know, now evolving themselves with the times. And as far as a cover up goes, why do you think that the government is covering it up? Why do you think the government is hiding all these things?
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to answer this question for a long time because it seems like every time you have an answer, you can convince yourself it's not a good enough one, or at least that's the way I go for it. Because on the one hand, it's like, well, why would they hide it if it was some kind of gigantic demon that would just eat me anyway? Just let him go. He'll die. He's not coming back to tell the story. But it's, you know, I watched a video on Chinese fishing boats the other day and how the ocean is actually much more alive on the surface than we realize, because the only way that we can actually tell how many ships are on the ocean's surface at any given time is because of essentially a tracker. But the tracker can be shut off at any given point, and this and then that renders the Chinese ship invisible. And so we actually don't know how many ships are on the surface at any given time, even if they have a tracker, because they shut it off. And this video was made by guys who did it. They incognito went out into the ocean and they described how the ocean, where they were going around these Chinese islands and stuff like Taiwan and Thailand and off the coast of South America and all over the place, they were talking about how it looked like there was a literal city on when we were miles out into the ocean, because there were so many vessels and none of them were on radar. And to me, and so it astounded me to see this footage, and most of them were crewed by slaves. They were crewed by political prisoners and slaves who make up for China's massive fishing exports. And when it comes to the national parks, I think it's kind of like that. I think it's a combination of things. I think there are massive military bases out there, first of all. I think there are secret compounds all over the national parks, and that's why you can't go into certain locations without Black Hawks appearing overhead or something like that. I think that I know I was in the military, and there was this one point where I was stationed to guard a certain ammo depot, and it was just me and one other guy, and we were just out here with millions upon millions of dollars worth of ammunition in the middle of nowhere in the jungle. And it was just those kinds of experiences to me show me that there's, you know, you have the cartel marijuana operations that are found all over the place in these national parks. So I do think, first of all, that there are illegal activities of magnificent scale going on out there. But when it comes to like a supernatural thing, I also think that there are entrances to the inner earth out there, and we're not supposed to find them. And I think they're like Mel's Hole type deals, where they're like, it's an unmistakable entrance to another realm out there. And they make up certain stories that are both true and not true. So the cartel is out there, so don't go too far. Okay, well, I don't want to get my head cut off by the cartel, so I'm going to be really careful not to go too far. But also, then you have American Horror Story with their feral person episodes, so be careful of feral people. And then you have all the missing person cases where people are seeing feral people, and that's both true and not true, because there are feral people out there. They have been spotted. There have been accounts of people who have been attacked by people that are living out there who live in a feral criminal way. And so that is also true. But it's also used as a deterrent, because it is only the first layer of fear that they use to hide what's actually there. And I do think that there is a supernatural connection in many of these parks that A, we can't really fathom because it's so incredible, and B, is probably a direct line to these inner earth realms that they talk about. I don't know if we can accidentally discover inner earth entrances anymore, because there's right. so much land that has just been taken up by governments that you just can't go to. You know, during Operation Iraqi Freedom and you know, when we were going into Afghanistan, there were stories about how ISIS and the Taliban were destroying history and blowing up caves and like stuff like that. Why were they defacing these ancient locations to get rid of the remnants of the old gods and the evidence that there was something before? You know, what is going on underneath the pyramids? They told us a little bit, but just enough to appease our curiosity. And it's that kind of thing. I said on a show the other day, I said, you know, all of our conspiracy theories lately have been proven right. Literally all of them. And the way they did it was in the most undramatic fashion. I don't know if undramatic's a word, but they did it in the least dramatic fashion, where they just said, yep, you're right, we can control the weather. Yep, you're right, we don't know what's flying around above New Jersey. Yep, you're right, there is something underneath the Grand Canyon. And everybody was just like, oh, see, told you, we were right. But then they all just let it drop. And so the government could literally come out and say tomorrow, I mean, look at the Epstein files, look at Diddy, look at all this stuff. All they have to be like is, yep, you're right. And so the government, and then we just let it go. But the government could come out tomorrow and they could say there is a literal universe inside of the earth, and you get to it through Yellowstone. And people would be like, I freaking knew it. And then that would be it. That would be it. And then everybody would be like, yeah, there's a place where you can go in Yellowstone, and the government said it goes to the inner earth. But they're not telling you why that exists, because in my opinion, there is still a deep watcher influence in this place. And I mean, Christ hasn't returned. We haven't been redeemed. It still sucks here. So obviously, their story is not done yet. And that means that there's something unexplainably horrible still living on this planet somewhere. And if in the past it walked on two legs and it ate people, why do we no longer believe it does? Is it just because we haven't seen it in a while? Probably. Why haven't we seen it in a while? Because the government protects it in millions upon millions of acres of wilderness with all of these different layers of fear factor in between so that you never actually get to the center of the lollipop. That's personally my opinion on it.
Yeah, that's so true. And keeping you controlled through fear. And when you bring up the Blackhawk, I have a friend of mine who researches out of the Ocala National Forest here in Florida. And she was coming out of one of the areas that she goes to research Sasquatch. And sure enough, overhead, this Blackhawk helicopter started circling, and she has videos of it and everything. And it's really interesting. They have a bombing range out in the middle of the Ocala National Forest. That's kind of a strange thing. You'll just be driving and then you kind of come along to it. And I've been out there to it, and it's interesting. The signs will say, you know, do not cross here, live bomb. So I think there is that fear factor to it. And you're right. I think too many people, we release something and then it's just dropped and nothing comes of it. And as far as that watcher influence, I do believe it's here. I think when we talk about the governments of the world and stuff, I think it's, you look around and you can see it. If you have the eyes to see and to know, and I think that's like something about learning code, or once you understand symbology, you start seeing it everywhere and it becomes impossible to ignore. I just went to a library recently to hear somebody give a presentation, and I was looking at the art that they had outside this art fixture, and it was like a bird and maybe some grass. And then what do you know? All seeing eye. And I was like, huh, that's weird. What does this have to do with anything in regards to Florida? And it's just this one eye symbolism. But it's interesting. Yeah, once you start seeing those patterns, they just start appearing everywhere. So I would have to agree. I really do think that we are under that oppressive rule right now from the top down. I think that we live in a very, very interesting time, to say the least.
Yeah, and I think all these stories are, they're stories, but at the same time, they are attempts to be seen. They're beacons, they're flares sent up, because like we kind of said already, if you don't, once you start believing in this stuff because you've seen something, then it starts to have even just a little bit of power over you, just because maybe just your fascination with it. But that in of itself is an audience. You give it an audience. And so like when you have stories of obviously Leviathan, but even let's just take it one step kookier, like let's just say like Davy Jones and the Flying Dutchman, you know, like you have these, who is actually believed by a lot of pirates to be kind of more like a demon that was on the waters at any given time, and you have like stuff like that. It's possible to me too that these things are just looking for something that people actually believe in, because then they exist in a more powerful form. And a lot of those stories, sure, they were only believed by one or two people, and so they didn't really take off and stuff like that. Demons don't succeed at everything, monsters don't succeed at everything that they try, but you know, similar to us, but they still try, and they still consistently get cast out. They get cast into the bodies of pigs. They get, you know, they get cast out of human beings when humans get possessed. I've seen it with my own eyes in South America when people cast demons out of locations and properties and apartments. And, you know, I have witches in, like South American witches in my family, and some of the stuff that they do is downright creepy, but it's because it's real. And I think that a lot of these things, these stories come from those efforts to be real, not necessarily just made up things, but like as runways to their identity that they can then use to be on the planet, like the gods of old. If you go back even a few hundred years, you're crazy to not believe in monsters. So it's, you know, you're the crazy one who doesn't believe in all of these gods. You're the crazy one who doesn't believe that there's monsters out there. You're the crazy one who doesn't believe that there's a demon that has a heart of ice that turns you into a cannibal. You're the one who's being negligent because you're not taking these things seriously. So obviously nobody really wants to be affiliated with you. You're the one who's wild for not being a Christian and stuff like that. And now it's the complete opposite. So it's, you're the crazy one to believe in monsters. You're the crazy one to believe in Leviathan or the Flying Dutchman or whatever's going on inside the parks. And I just think that is so telling of humanity. And it just goes right back to how we forget so easily. But these things that we are talking about today, only a couple hundred years ago, 100 at most, were literally commonplace names, things that if you didn't believe in, then you have, like, you're kind of an idiot, you know? And that's just a funny thing to me. I think that humanity's memory being so short is its downfall. I mean, literally, I didn't mean for this to be a Bible talk the entire time, but it's kind of like, look at how the Israelites, they literally had a fire tornado leading them out of Egypt. But the first opportunity they got, they started worshiping a golden cow that they made themselves. It's like, it's just, and that was literally like the same period of time, but they forgot so quickly. And that's also part of our problem. Our ancestors may have known what was in the parks, but because they forgot, and then they didn't tell their kids, so they never even knew, and then they definitely didn't tell us. So now we are now figuring it out by ourselves, even though if we would have just been told three generations ago, none of this stuff would be a mystery. It's just a constant cycle of forgetting and rediscovery.
Absolutely. And I think that goes to the quote, which is, I think the devil's greatest feat is convincing people that he's not real.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of goes into what you're saying as far as, monsters aren't real and things like that, that as a society, that if you do believe in those things, that you're the kooky one, you're the strange one, but really you're just seeing the fabric of our being and where we're at. What are your thoughts on like Tartaria? When we talk about generations back, do you think... real or not real?
I got in big trouble for my Tartaria opinions because I used to believe in it. Okay. I used to believe in it, but, and I think I still do in a way, but not
aspects
in the way that's,
of it.
Way that's been popularized. Like, it doesn't make any sense for a Far Eastern European nation to cover the entire planet. It just doesn't, because unless there was some great scheme to overwrite the entire like literal flood style apocalypse that rewrote only the story, only the literary evidence, but none of the actual planet. And when you come to, when you look at the capstones and like, or the cornerstones of buildings, or the like subterranean buildings in Boston or New York or wherever they want to, I mean, they say they've got them in Oshkosh, Wisconsin. Like they've got them everywhere. When you actually take the time to look at the history and you actually look at the archaeological evidence, you can find out why they actually did it. And I have yet to come across a single example. I'm no my lunch break, okay? But I have yet to come across a single example that I can't disprove. And because of that, I just don't think that Tartaria was this Far Eastern European descendants of the Mongol horde race that somehow took on massive technology, robbed Nikola Tesla or whatever they did, and then just became so globally powerful that, I mean, that it's essentially like a Tower of Babel story, right? And I don't know, but I do believe in certain elements of it. Like, I do think that there is an erased history in North America, for instance.
Right.
I do think that there is a 100 to 150 year period where we have no clue what happened, and literally everything they tell us is a lie. I do think there is that, but I don't think it's Tartaria. And I also think that the airships thing is a total scheme. I think we did have better modes of flight and better modes of electricity usage that they hid because for financial reasons. And so that stuff I do believe in. And Nikola Tesla pretty much proved that.
Yeah. Yeah.
They didn't hide him fast enough, I don't think. But like the whole story of flight is just BS. I mean, the whole thing where like one day we're flying on paper and sticks and then like 80 years later we're on the moon. Are you kidding me? Like that just doesn't make any sense to me. So I do think that there's a whole story involving a massive technology, I don't know, like they hid something about technology for sure, but I don't think it's the way that we're led to believe it is with the Tartaria thing.
Right. Yeah. I would have to agree with that assessment. I totally am into the hidden history aspect of it, which brings me to this. If folks want to know where to follow you and, you know, get more of your deep dives, where can they find you? And do you have any, I think you mentioned a project you have coming up. Is there anything cool coming up that you'd like to share?
Yeah, hopefully within the next, within early 2026, I'm going to be heading back down to Colombia and Ecuador and searching for some goblins. I'm going to be talking to a bunch of people who allegedly have them in their homes, have seen them, and who hunt them themselves. And these are not your typical people. These are third world indigenous people who are really highly involved with the spiritual realm. So I'm going to go down there and I'm going to document that. If anybody wants to find me, it's a 21CD, and I'm on YouTube. I'm pretty much everywhere. I'm on Spotify, Apple, all those. And yeah, it's a good time over there. I do a lot of video heavy content. I'm primarily video oriented, but you don't have to watch my videos to get the gist of what I'm saying.
Well, thank you so much for coming on tonight. I have thoroughly enjoyed the conversation and it took some turns I wasn't expecting, but I really, really enjoyed it. So just thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, of course. It was a great time.
And that wraps up this week's journey into Iceland's otherworldly folklore. To hear about John's encounter with the hidden people, to the deeper mysteries threading through cultures all over the world. Conversations like this remind me that the supernatural isn't isolated. It's connected, ancient, and watching us more closely than we think. If you enjoyed tonight's episode and want to keep exploring the strange with me, make sure you're following Dark Florida on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast, and you can support the show and our on-the-ground investigations at buymeacoffee.com/Dark Florida. And don't forget to subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/@DarkFlorida411 for upcoming field footage and more. And if you have a story, Bigfoot, paranormal, or anything unexplained, I'd love to hear from you. Feel free to email me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com, and you never know, your story might be the next episode. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Brooke Moreland, and this has been another episode of Dark Florida. Stay curious and stay strange.